This is a quote from the Torah. Hocheach tochiach et amitecha. You shall rebuke your friend, your fellow man. Lehochiach echad meYisrael is an obligation to a fellow Jew. Sheino mitnahei keshura. If you see that he's doing something which you consider wrong, bein bidvarim shebein adam lechaveru, whether it's something that the other person has transgressed in the area of the relationship between men and men, o bein adam lemakom, or between men and God, you have the obligation to rebuke him. Shenemar, hocheach tochiach et amitecha. You shall certainly rebuke your fellow men. Velo tisa alav chet, in order that you shouldn't keep. Literally, it means you shouldn't carry towards him a sin. In other words, if you think that he has committed a sin, don't keep it within you. Express it. Say it out. Ve'amru b'sifra, in the oral tradition, it mentions minayin. How do we know? Im hochachto dalet ve'et v'ami. What about if you tried it 4 times, 5 times? Ve'lo chazar, and the person has not changed his ways. She'atach hayav lazor lochicho. You have to continue trying to change him. Talmud lomer hocheach tochiach. The Torah repeats it twice. Why does the Torah repeat it twice? In order to teach you that you have not fulfilled your obligation just by mentioning your criticism just once. Afilu meyape amim. Even if you have to do it 100 times, it's still your obligation. Never give up hope on the other person.
I have a question. What if you're a Baal Teshuva and he's also a Baal Teshuva and you're both just coming into...
Yeah, okay. We'll see some of the details, some of the limitations, some of the exceptions to the rule.
And if you do it in public, then aren't you? That's like
all right. Okay. Again, we are going to see this. Ve'amru sham b'sifra, and again in the sifra, in this rabbinical tradition, yachol mochicho. You might have thought that you are allowed to rebuke him upanav mishtanot, even though you are embarrassing him. Now, how do we know that your obligation doesn't go as far as embarrassing him? Talmud lomar velo tisa alav chay. Let him not become embarrassed. In other words, don't let him carry a grudge against you. This is how the oral tradition interprets the statement. Lo tisa alav chay. Don't make him commit the sin of embarrassing him. The zemelamed, and from this we learn now, shebitchilat atochecha, it's crucial that in the beginning of this process of criticism, of rebuking, shera'u lochia beseter. So first of all, make sure that you do it in private, not in public, because in public is much more sensitive to embarrassment. And even when you do it in private, ubelashon rachab, don't do it in such a way that you right away arouse in him an antagonism. Because if you do that, you're not fulfilling your obligation, because he's not going to change anyway. Vedivrei nachat, you have to do it in such a way, it should be very, very pleasant for him to hear it. You have to become such an expert in rebuking that you can do it in a way that not only doesn't it hurt, but the person receiving it actually enjoys the conversation with you.
What constitutes public?
Anyone. In this particular case, anyone. No, even no. One person. Even in front of one person is already in public. The Ein Safek, of course, he adds, I have no doubt, he says, Sheim lo chazar bekach, what about if you feel that this person will only change if you embarrass him in public? This is the only possible way that you can do it. I have no doubt, ein safek, shemachlimin hachotei berabim. If you must do it, you do it. Which means, as a last resort, it's even permitted to use this extreme measure, which is public embarrassment, in order to force him to change. Okay, yeah.
I mean, I'm just stupid. Yeah, you're meant to go about your life rather than embarrass someone in public. So, which has greater priority? I mean, on the one hand you're saying it's so terrible to embarrass someone, on the other hand you're saying, well, it's actually quite reasonable to do that if you think that's the only way.
All right, so you're asking, since when, since we have the rule that you're never allowed to transgress one law in order to fulfill another one, right? I put it in different words, what you are asking. Since we have a rule that we never find, except for the exception, we spoke about the exception, but the rule is do not transgress one law to fulfill another law. You have the obligation to give charity. You have no money. Are you allowed to steal in order to give charity? No, you can't do it. Even if you steal from the rich in order to give to the poor, you can't do it. Because the end does not justify the means in Judaism as a rule, except for the exceptions. If so, embarrassing someone in public is an open transgression of the Torah law. You're not allowed to embarrass someone in public. So how can you do that for the sake of rebuking someone? You're transgressing one law in order to fulfill another law. You know, how are you allowed to do it? Okay? This is a very valid question, what you're asking. Can anybody guess what the possible answer could be in this situation? Now,
maybe the embarrassment will cause him to change that. I can see that. I'd like to add that I've heard from other people that the sin of embarrassing someone is tantamount or equal to killing
it. Exactly. So definitely you're not allowed to kill someone for the right purpose, you're saying.
So there might be quite a fine line between the two. You'd have to be very sure about whether this would help the person before you do it.
All right, yeah. Yeah, so you're halfway there, yeah? So you have to be sure or pretty... I mean, nobody's ever sure of anything that he's going to do, but you have to have a certain amount of certainty before you use this method, you're saying. All right.
You need to try other approaches before you resort to this.
All right. Yeah.
Probably if he's going to sin, keep on sinning unless you embarrass him. His ultimate destiny is to sort of be dying anyway.
So
it's you're only if he's going to die anyway. If you embarrass him, you might be killing him, but he's going to die anyway. So
you might as well kill him because he's going to die anyway.
Well, you might as well take a chance to save him.
Die yourself.
You might as well take a chance to save him. You have nothing to lose.
Right. It's a little bit. Let me just tell you what the commentaries say here. Let me ask you something. Let's say someone in the middle of the street, right, in the middle of Main Street, he gets a heart attack. And you go over to him and you rip his shirt in order to massage his heart, in order that he should revive. Now this is a very embarrassing thing in the middle of the street, to be stripped naked. Yeah? Are you embarrassing him? If you just see somebody, you just go over to somebody and you rip his shirt, this is definitely an embarrassment. If we compare embarrassing someone with killing him, so therefore, would you accept such a rationalization? Well, I'm a doctor. I could save his life, but I'm not going to embarrass him in public and tear his shirt in order to massage his heart and save his life. Does that make sense to anyone? It doesn't make sense, right? Tell me why it doesn't make sense. Why can't I justify my not saving his life by saying, I don't want to embarrass him in public and rip his shirt in the middle of Rehov Yafo here.
Yeah? He assumed he's a professional, and a professional needs to be able to do his work, and he's not there to embarrass somebody.
So that's more important than
why? Because you are saying one is more important than the other. Then again, you are saying that if the end is important enough, it justifies the means. It's even better than just saying because one is more important than the other. Because ultimately, if you were to ask him, can you assume that after you save his life, and you ask him, you know, by the way, you know how I saved your life? By ripping your shirt in the middle of downtown Jerusalem. And it was very embarrassing for you because you were just stripped naked in the middle of, you know, when people were there. It's very embarrassing for you. Do you think I was justified, or do you see it as an embarrassment? You know what he would answer you? Embarrassment? What kind of an embarrassment? In retrospect, if that saved my life, you can't even consider it an embarrassment. Meaning, had I known at the time that this might save my life, you think I would consider it an embarrassment? In retrospect, such a thing is not an embarrassment at all. Yes? Does that make sense, such a justification? Which means it's not that we consider it an embarrassment. We can judge whether something is an insult or embarrassment without putting it in the right perspective. We have to put it in the right perspective. If you are going to save a life, ripping somebody's shirt and giving him a heart massage is definitely not an embarrassing act. Of course, if you don't know anything else, it might look that way. But if you know the whole picture, it's not really something embarrassing. So what about if instead of saving his life, his physical life, I save his soul by embarrassing him? Wouldn't it be the same thing?
No, it wouldn't work though, because...
I understand, wait. But I'm just asking you. Let's use the exact analogy, but instead of talking about saving the physical life, let's talk about saving his soul. Let's say the person, right, that does something which I am convinced kills his soul, destroys his soul. His man is destroying his soul. He keeps going around slandering people. That's something that destroys the soul. And I know that the only way that I can stop him is by embarrassing him in public. This is what I feel. Let's say I succeed. What does it mean I succeed? Eventually, it hits home. Don't you think that the person himself will say to himself, now, it's true that I was embarrassed in public, but is it any more embarrassment that the person who had his shirt ripped open and his life saved? Once we believe, you see, the problem is in how we see the importance of saving the soul. Of course, if you don't believe that that soul exists and that there is such a concept of saving the soul, so of course it would be prohibited. But if we feel that saving a soul is at least as important as saving a life, then is that embarrassment really looked at as an embarrassment altogether? Is there any more embarrassment in that than ripping somebody's shirt open in order to save his life? You understand the analogy clearly? So we are not saying that it's a matter of the end justifying the means. We are denying that you are committing an act of embarrassment. It's not embarrassing if you look at the complete picture. Do you hear this idea? I understand it's a subtle, it's a difficult idea, the difference
it's
between...
It's so difficult to that. I read Guard Your Tongue and it doesn't speak of anything like that. It says that embarrassing is a totally unsuccessful way in all matters.
Well, it's not exactly so. I mean, even in... Well, I don't know, in the original of Guard Your Tongue, Shmirat HaLashon, he says clearly that there are some extreme situations that we are going to talk about. What are those extreme situations? There are extreme situations where you are obligated to use this extreme tool in order to save somebody's soul.
If you're convinced that it will
help. Okay, now, the point is, how much conviction do you need? Do you have to be 100% sure? No, the analogy still stands. In order to give him a heart massage, you have to be 100% sure that his life is going to be saved? What about if there's only a 10% chance that his life will be saved? You can still do it. You can still do it.
What do we think?
What is the crucial thing? That my intention is pure. I want to save his life. I don't want to embarrass him. As a matter of fact, it hurts me that I have to rip his shirt open in public. But I know that that's the only way to get to what I have to do. My intention is 100% pure. What about if I try? And there was a reasonable chance that I will save his life. And at the end, I did not save his life. Can I be accused of embarrassing somebody in public because anyway it didn't help? No, because everybody knows that I did it in order to save his life. So you don't have to have a guarantee that it's going to work. You must have a pure intention that you are doing it in order for the purpose to work. Then your act is not considered an act of embarrassing somebody in public. You hear this definition of what's called embarrassing somebody in public?
Yes, and what do we base our contention, however, that the act of embarrassing him in public by ripping open his shirt is minor in comparison to saving his life. I mean, what is the scale which establishes this relationship whereby one outweighs by far and large the other?
Again, I'm not saying outweighs. The word outweighs is not a proper word because outweighs means that it's a transgression. Except that the other one is more important. That we would be allowed to.
We know that
we do not consider it an embarrassment. You understand? Meaning we are redefining what an embarrassment is. This is not considered embarrassing somebody in public. Because in retrospect...
How do we know?
What do you mean, how do we know?
How do we know? I mean, how do we know? I mean, upon what do we base our contention that ripping his shirt in public is really nothing vis-a-vis saving his life? I mean, what is the criteria?
We assume, and it's an assumption, right? We assume that if it will work, let's say, if it will work, if my heart massage will work and save his heart, will it be considered by anyone? Meaning, will the act of ripping a shirt be isolated from the result and be considered an embarrassing thing? Or will everybody take the act of ripping a shirt as just part of the overall process of saving his life?
Then what you're saying is that whatever the majority of people will say, the majority of mankind will say that one is really nothing vis-a-vis the other, then you're not basing it on any absolute.
A majority...
It's all relative. And the Torah is not relative. And the Torah is absolute.
Well, not really. You see, then we are getting into a very, very complicated area of how to make judgments. I see exactly what you mean. Do you have to make a survey and see what the world says? Not really. Let me give you an example.
Another example.
What are the criteria?
How do I know that saving the life is better? Maybe not.
What do you mean?
Who are we to assume?
I'm the devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
How do I know intrinsically
here?
How do I know intrinsically that saving the life is worth more than saving him? Than embarrassing him. I don't know.
Without the basic Torah standards, I wouldn't know anything.
What?
So I have to know what the Torah says. I'll try to figure out from the Torah law what the Torah is teaching me. Now, I know that the Torah tells me that in order to save someone's life, I am allowed to do an act that otherwise would be considered an embarrassment. Then I have to try to learn out, what is the Torah telling me? Is the Torah telling me then that the end justifies the means? So we say, no, the Torah is not telling me that. The Torah is telling me that an act of embarrassment cannot be looked upon as an isolated act. You have to put it in the perspective of the purpose of this embarrassment. If the purpose is such that people will say, you can't call that an embarrassment. Now, who are the people? Do I have to take a survey from the whole world? No. I am responsible in front of God as the ultimate judge. You know, whenever I do such an act, I am the ultimate judge. Of course, by the way, let me tell you, let me change the case a little bit. A person has a heart attack, then somebody comes over to him, tears his shirt, and starts massaging, but instead of the left side, the right side. And then you find out, the man is not even a doctor. He wanted to try out something that he once saw on television or something, or he read in a newspaper. Can he be then taken to court? And besides, you know, let's say the person lived, because otherwise you can even take him to court for causing the death of the person. But let's say the person lived. Can the person say, if you are not a doctor, you don't know how to do it, and you just ripped my shirt, now I'm going to take you to court. First of all, pay for my shirt. Second of all, pay for my embarrassment. Can you do that?
What was his intent when you ran over to the guy?
All right, so that's interesting. What was his intent? We say his intent is not considered pure because intent can't be isolated from your expertise. Which means, my intent is to save your life, but you don't know how to. So what do you get into it? Which means that there is an impurity in it. Meaning it's not consistent with your knowledge. Therefore, we do isolate the act of embarrassing the person from his own intent, even though his intent might have been, well, I'll try it out, who knows? But who are you? I mean, you're not a doctor, you don't know how to save a person's life. Let's say you have no expertise in that, you have no experience in that, so then he would be responsible. You understand? So therefore, of course, he can be taken to court, and he may have to pay for both the shirt and the embarrassment. You know, there is a payment for embarrassment.
Okay.
Okay, so this is a very complicated system, and then the court has to sit and consider who is the embarrasser and the embarrassee, right? I mean, who did you embarrass in under what circumstances? So that depends. I mean, there are certain basic rules, but it's already a subjective thing that the courts decide what exactly the payment will be. But there is a payment. There is a payment called boshet. Okay? So, but in general, of course, you'll have to give an account. Meaning, you may be taken to court, but the court will accept your opinion. If you can convince the court that you had pure intentions in embarrassing the person, and you didn't see it as an act of embarrassment, you were looking at the purpose, then this embarrassment is not called as an embarrassment.
Even though you're not a doctor.
So, wait a second. If you're not a doctor, then we consider you being negligent in your intentions. So then, of course, you are responsible for everything you did. Meaning, we can't justify your intentions if it doesn't have a solid base. But if you had a solid base for your intentions, in other words, you are a doctor or you took the course of how to save a person's life when he gets a heart attack, and you tried your best, you can show you have witnesses that you tried your best. Let's say you did not succeed. It doesn't matter. He cannot accuse you for embarrassing because your intentions were pure.
Rabbi.
Okay?
Presumably, even if you're not a doctor, but there's no one else around and you're not too sure what to do, then, you know, you try your best.
Again, such a situation, the court will have to judge. Meaning, if you can justify your actions, that according to the situation, you were not negligent in your trying to do it, then of course, you don't have to be a doctor, you know, you don't even have to be an expert. You just said, I figured it's better than nothing. If you can convince the court that under the situation you had a reasonable basis for making such a decision, of course you will be found not guilty. But again, this is something that a court will have to decide. But the general rule is that the act of embarrassment cannot be taken isolated from the result. This is why when you ask the question, how can it be that the Torah allows me to embarrass a person in order to save his soul? It's not that the Torah is telling you that one is more important than the other. The Torah is redefining what's called an act of embarrassment that the Torah prohibits. This is not an act of embarrassment. This is a tool given to men. Embarrassing people is given to men as a tool when you have to save his life. Again, I'm not only talking about physical life, I'm talking about spiritual life too.
You don't always make a case for spiritual life being the more important, because which really is greater, living 70 years than a physical life or living for eternity?
Exactly. We do, as a matter of fact, you know, the Talmud makes such a justification. For instance, it says, let's say that you have some, you know, there was such a thing in the olden days, a Rabbi Muvhak. You know what a Rabbi Muvhak means? Rabbi means a teacher. But in the olden days, very often, you know, people didn't learn from texts. So sometimes there was one person who was your whole source of all your information. This is called your Rabbi Muvhak, which means your link to Torah. This man was your link with Torah. Now, he is compared to your father. The same way that your father is your link to the physical chain of the Jewish people, this man, this Rabbi Muvhak, is your link to the chain of spirituality. What about if you have something, a favor that you both are asking you for? You have an obligation to honor your father and give it to him, or do it for him. But the Rabbi Muvhak is also asking you for the same thing. Who has priority?
Spiritual.
The spiritual father. Why? Because he brings you, this is in the words of the Talmud, he brings you to the spiritual life and your father brings you to physical life. That's exactly your rationale. Of course. Whatever is justified in the situation of the doctor that rips the shirt in order to save a life, so much more so it's justified when you are saving the person's soul. But of course, it's important that you have to have a reasonable basis to believe that it's going to work. Okay? Now,
Where does it say in the Torah that it redefines shaming somebody for life?
No. We are just using the idea of the law of the Torah, which is that you are allowed to save a life even if you have to embarrass someone.
Where does it say that?
Yes, if you isolate this law, is your knowledge of the prohibition against stealing as clear as the knowledge of the greatest sage in the world for this particular thing? Something. Meaning, is my knowledge that if I take, arsenic, I mean, some kind of a poison, right, it's going to kill me. That knowledge, is that as clear as the knowledge of the doctor that if I take arsenic, it's going to kill me? Maybe he knows more how it works, but the fact itself, can I consider myself an expert in that area? Am I an expert in the fact that if you throw yourself down from the Empire State Building, you are not going to survive?
That's concrete. That's what about with abstract?
That's what
cause.
I mean. Like what? Like what? Give me an example.
Like a teabag.
Are you allowed to rebuke in public? For sure not. Because first of all, you have to try, as you mentioned before, every other method. Remember, rebuking in public is only a last resort. He mentions this, right? In the beginning, you must try every other means without hurting him. In the beginning, you have to do it in a way that it won't even hurt him, that it won't even hurt his ego. If you do it in a way
ha ha ha, you don't know and I know, you know, if you do it in such a way, like, you know, that you hurt his ego, of course, it's counterproductive. Sure. It's not going to work. So therefore you have no right to do it.
What if you're absolutely certain that it won't help? That you're telling him is only going to arouse his anger?
All right. You can decide this will not work. He doesn't have the respect. He doesn't respect me, first of all. He won't take me seriously. So by my telling him, it will only arouse in him negative feelings. So what's better, that I should say or I shouldn't say? Don't say.
Not only that,
Talmud says it clearly. The same way that it's a mitzvah to say something which is proper at the right time, it's a mitzvah sometimes to control yourself and not say it when it's not the proper time or it's not the proper person. You hear the statement? So, of course, there is such a situation that if you're not going to help, of course, then you have no right whatsoever to try it.
Okay. I often have a situation...
Are you allowed to do it? Am I doing right? And you say, no, you're not doing right. Is that called rebuke? That's not called rebuke. That's called limud Torah, learning Torah. He's asking you, you're giving him answers. That's not even called rebuke. You don't even need the usual methodology of rebuke in such a case when they approach you. The whole concept of rebuke is based on the situation, is the situation where I approach him, I take the initiative. When he takes the initiative, it's not even called rebuke.
Yes, but would it not be better in some instances, even if you are asked, to respond, I don't know. Why? Because if you do tell him what the law is, and you're pretty well convinced...
When it's better not to say anything, than to
even
say
Even though you're
it.
Asked.
Oh, you mean even if you're asked,
yes,
you mean?
Yes, but
that's
the
reason,
what's
so.
The deal? Am I allowed to write the letter on Shabbos, and you say no? But the guy is going to anyway write it.
That is a problem. You're not allowed to lie to him. Meaning if he asks you, are you allowed to write on Shabbat? And you know that even if you say you're not allowed to, he will continue doing it. You have no obligation towards him. You have no obligation towards him to tell him a lie.
Then you should say
of course, because you're not allowed to lie to him. Because you're not allowed to lie to him.
How is the teaching of these people? I mean, these people have to start evidently... My question is that these people have to learn like the ways they want to identify with Judaism, with Jewish people. And, you know, you can't just start from any place else. The best way is to start from religion. So there is
so pessimistic, I mean, in the whole situation, as and say, for instance, well, he didn't keep the next Shabbat after I spoke to him, so I failed. We have no idea. We have no idea. As long as his reaction is not negative, none will come. And his son will say, you know what? I just joined a school called Or Sameach, for instance, right? Because of what you said to him, maybe his reaction won't be as negative as it might have been otherwise. So then it was worthwhile. And we never know, really, the consequences of what we are saying. Can't say that. Yeah.
Is it true,
that the reason why God gave us so many mitzvot, which makes life so much harder, I told you what Maimonides says, an incredible statement. Because at the end, the few mitzvot that you did were worthwhile, even though there are so many that you didn't do and you transgressed them. But the few that you did, since you have so many to choose from, 613, it's worthwhile. This is what the statement means. God wanted to do something good for the Jews. This is why he gave him so many mitzvot. Because the one that you do, in retrospect, can do more good than the damage done by so many other transgressions. But it's a very controversial issue, what my mother says. Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, quick question. If people are, say, doing something wrong, like saying...
No, the real interpretation of that. It says like this. What is the limit of my obligation to rebuke? So, the answer is, ad until shehiko, until he hits you. So, it's a question. What does it mean, until? Till he actually hits you? Or till you judge that if you go the next step, he might hit you. You know what I mean? So many people say that it doesn't mean that he actually, you have to wait until he beats you up. It means that if you judge that the limit has come to what he can take from you, and in the next step, according to your judgment, he will just react against you, at that moment you have to stop. I mean, before you actually become embarrassed or you are damaged. But there are some commentaries that say, no, it means that the only way to stop is when he stops you. You understand? Which means that you even have to go as far as being embarrassed in order to stop that other person. But not everybody says that. And the consensus is that your obligation is up to the point where you think that they will react violently against you.
Is it a mitzvah?
To rebuke?
Yeah.
One of the 613 commandments. Okay, now. Another very interesting...